Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, cultural enrichment, and all-inclusive fares. Discover more at Viking.com.
Signs of a brewing board seat fight at Salesforce. Plus, airlines hike transatlantic fares amid expectations of a record travel year, and where the Fed and small businesses don't see eye to eye.
The Fed wants to cool this economy down and kind of bring wages more in line with historical trends, and small businesses are having to increase what they're having to pay just to compete and get those workers.
It's Friday, January 27th. I'm Luke Vargas with the Wall Street Journal, and here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. Activist investor Elliott Management is preparing to nominate a slate of directors at Salesforce, according to people familiar with the matter, a sign that a board seat battle may be looming. Journal Markets reporter Rebecca Fung has more.
This news comes just days after the Journal first reported that Elliott had made a multi-billion dollar investment in Salesforce. In terms of a potential board seat battle, people familiar with the matter tell us that Elliott is having conversations with numerous tech executives, as well as those with other industry backgrounds. We should also know that any election of directors at Salesforce would take place under recently implemented so-called universal proxy rules. That just means that investors will now be able to pick and choose who they want to see on a board rather than voting entirely with a company or with the activist slate.
Investing giant Blackstone's net income fell during the fourth quarter, and it missed its assets under management target as its fundraising weakened in some of its strategies aimed at individual investors. Blackstone's assets under management rose to $974.7 billion, but came in shy of its $1 trillion goal. BREIT, Blackstone's non-traded real estate investment trust aimed at individual investors, has been a recent focus for shareholders. Despite posting an 8.4% return last year, it experienced an uptick in requests from investors to sell shares in the fourth quarter, leading Blackstone to limit redemptions and leading to a big drop in its stock. The shares have since recovered that ground. Fast fashion giant H&M has reported a 68% decline in annual profits for the 12 months ending November 30th compared to the previous financial year. Despite a rise in sales, rising costs due to inflation and the cost of the company's decision to exit Russia devoured H&M's margins. The company's perception as a low-cost brand has also been challenged in the form of increased competition from rivals Shein and Primark, whose products are typically cheaper. U.S. officials say that American forces killed senior Islamic State militant Bilal al-Sudan, as well as 10 other operatives of the group, in northern Somalia late Wednesday. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin said that al-Sudani was, quote, responsible for fostering the growing presence of ISIS in Africa and for funding the group's operations worldwide, including in Afghanistan. And on tap for today, the Commerce Department will release one of the Fed's closely watched inflation gauges, the Personal Consumption Expenditures Price Index for December. Household spending and income figures for that month are also due out, along with earnings updates from oil major Chevron, American Express, HCA Healthcare, and Colgate Palmolive. Summer 2023 is gearing up to be a record travel season, especially for lucrative transatlantic trips. And demand for trips to Europe isn't just high during the summer months anymore, amid signs that for this year at least, there is no such thing as a travel off-season. Wall Street Journal travel reporter Allison Poley has been crunching the latest earnings updates from air carriers, and she joins us now with more on this story. Hey, Allison.
Thanks for having me.
Allison, tell us right out of the gate, what are airlines saying about demand that they're seeing and the prices that they are able to charge eager travelers now?
It seemed like everybody was going to Europe last summer in 2022 when the restrictions went away and people were finally able to take these trips that they postponed. But the demand has not waned in 2023, and executives are predicting that it will be a record summer for transatlantic travel. So Delta's president said in their earnings call that March is becoming a peak month for transatlantic travel. And so when it comes to the cost, that means flights are not going to be cheap. So if you're looking at a flight in March from the U.S. to Europe, it costs an average of $857, according to travel search engine Kayak. The average flight for June is over $1,200.
And why is transatlantic travel in particular so important for airlines?
They've been missing those routes for many years now, and they are lucrative for them. You have people who are usually leisure travelers who will be paying for seat upgrades. There's important business travel that goes on as well, which they need to come back. And so they've been waiting for a long time for demand to pick up. It's very important to them to get this back onto their balance sheets so that they're able to profit off of these.
Is the sense that you're getting that this off-season demand is likely to last?
It seems like it will this year, with the caveat that with the potential recession, things could change. But people are making these travel plans pretty far out. And travel advisors who I spoke to said people are already booking for the fall. So of course they could always cancel. But it seems that even with this economic uncertainty and all the news of the layoffs that are going on, people are really eager to have this vacation.
That was Wall Street Journal travel reporter Allison Poley. Allison, thank you.
Thanks again.
Coming up, we'll look at why the Fed's efforts to cool the economy are being complicated by small businesses that keep on hiring. That story after the break.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
Central bankers in the United States have lately been pointing to the labor market as a primary driver of high inflation, a complicating factor in their efforts to cool the economy. And while we've talked on the show this week about some signs that the labor market is beginning to cool, a sector of it remains hot: small business hiring. Wall Street Journal reporter Dion Rabowin has been investigating the ongoing surge in hiring by American small businesses, as well as how that surge could run afoul of the Fed's inflation-fighting priorities. And Dion joins us now with more on what he's found out. Hey, Dion, thanks for being with us.
Hey, Luke, thanks for having me.
It's our pleasure. So could you put this small business hiring surge into perspective?
Yes, small businesses have really been playing catch-up. When the pandemic hit, they fired a lot more workers than some of the larger companies, and then have really been crawling and bringing them back really with a faster pace and a much more significant pace over from 2021, 2022, and then having talked to some of them, they're continuing that this year. So while we've seen companies with under 250 employees add a net 3.67 million jobs, so that's adding 3.67 million jobs more than the number of people that have been laid off or have quit, large companies during that time still have a net negative 800,000 jobs added, so or 800,000 jobs lost by some of these bigger companies. So as one of the economists I quoted in the story says, small businesses are literally holding up the labor market.
And is that hiring push from small businesses continuing even as we see waves of layoff announcements from bigger businesses?
Yeah, it is. And small businesses really spent 2022 being frustrated that they couldn't hire as many people as they wanted to. And this year they're saying, okay, now that some of these other things are slowing down, Amazon's not hiring as many people, Facebook is announcing layoffs, and some of these bigger companies are doing hiring freezes, well, now we're better able to compete. The other thing they're saying is we're having to raise wages, we're having to pay out people to refer someone or offer bigger bonuses, things like that. So they're really doing kind of the opposite thing of what the Fed wants. The Fed wants to cool this economy down and kind of bring wages more in line with historical trends. And small businesses are having to increase what they're having to pay just to compete and get those workers.
Dion, what is giving small businesses the confidence to be going on a hiring spree now when larger businesses are reducing headcount?
Bigger companies get a lot of their outside funding from financial markets. So they sell bonds, they put out new shares of stock, and then that allows them to bring in more money so they can go out and do some of these hiring surges. Small businesses, it's really all about the day-to-day business that they're seeing. And what's happening is Americans are slowing their spending, but they're still spending a lot. So one of the numbers I reference is November and December of last year, those were the first two consecutive months of month-over-month spending declines that we'd seen since 2020. But those 2 months were still up, I think, at 7.6% and 6.0% from November and December the year before. So we're seeing a clear slowdown in spending, and the retail sales numbers and other things show that. But it's still a very high level because 2021 was such a high level, and just this comeback from the pandemic has still seen a very significant outpouring of spending by Americans.
Dion, all of this, I guess, is good news for people who are looking for work now. But you report that this trend is actually bumping up against the priorities of the Federal Reserve. How so?
Yeah, the Fed wants to slow the economy down because inflation is running so hot. And one of the things that Fed Chair Jerome Powell has really pointed to and pounded his fist on the table about is what he calls the unsustainable growth of wages and the labor market. So we're seeing exactly what I talked about with those small businesses. Businesses are having to increase wages to attract workers. They're having to pay more and increase those salaries. And when that happens, naturally, their current workers want more money. They want bigger raises, or they can go down the street and work somewhere else. And so that's causing everyone to raise wages. And as wages get higher, people are able to spend more money because companies charge more money. And you just get this kind of vicious cycle of things cost more, people demand more in wages, so things cost more, and company profit margins have never been higher than they are right now, so companies continue to raise prices, and as long as people can continue to afford the goods, they continue to buy them. What the Fed wants to do, and it's really kind of a messy secret about what they're after, is they need to slow inflation by making it so people can't afford to buy things. And one of the ways they're doing that is taking aim at the labor market.
And finally, Dion, how is this situation likely to be resolved?
Yeah, it's a situation where you're sort of seeing the Fed pitted against small businesses. And from what we've seen in the data the last few months, small businesses are losing. You're seeing a slowdown in terms of the number of businesses that say they're doing well, the number that say their sales are increasing. There's actually a net amount of businesses saying they are seeing decreasing sales and expect to see decreasing sales over the next 6 months. So small businesses are very down right now. Overall, they have a pretty negative outlook about this year, but they know that they can still make money, that people are still buying, because they're still trying to fill those employment gaps they've got. But there's not a lot of hope that things are going to get better for them in the near future.
That was Wall Street Journal reporter Dion Rabowin. Dion, thank you so much for the update.
Thanks for having me, Luke.
And finally, where in the world can a beer set you back over $20? The answer is Dubai, one of the world's priciest drinking destinations. This month, the Emirate abolished a 30% tax on wholesale alcohol sales, though so far that mostly hasn't led to lower prices in bars and restaurants. WSJ reporter Rory Jones says that while some high-end businesses see little need to pass on savings to thirsty customers, the United Arab Emirates, with its more than 80% expat population, has an interest in facilitating alcohol sales amid intensifying competition among Middle East monarchies who are bidding to be the playground for the rich.
The UAE is a country that's trying to diversify its economy away from oil revenues. It wants to attract tourists. It wants to get people in the tech sector to come and work here. The Dubai government, it wants to be seen as much more outward facing and look like any other big global city. And cutting the cost of alcohol is just one way of trying to attract them. You talk to some restaurant owners here, they say that people come into the city and they open a wine menu and they go, ouch, this is going to be a painful hit to the wallet.
And that's what's news for Friday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with the Wall Street Journal. Have a great weekend. And thanks for listening.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.